You worked all week and you're ready to let go. Let me tell you, friend, believe me when I say I know. It always feels like we're punching in. Well, I'm glad you stopped by. The fun is about to begin. You paid good money at the door. Get ready for a real good show. If you wanna have a real good time with me tonight, you gotta move like crazy, dancing in the pale moonlight. We can all get down, spin inside out. I'm telling you, if you really wanna groove, you gotta make a move.
Kirk, man, this is crazy because, you know, the episodes have been rolling, but we actually haven't done this in like over a month.
That? We had a bunch of episodes stacked out, which are auto releasing, and
we're kind of out of the groove. We're not polished as we were.
And we've got hecklers in the audience
actually. Live studio audience.
We do have a live studio audience, and they were heckling us. Thank you for joining us today, Kate and Randy. We'll put you in the B-roll when Riley does the video version of this, so they can see you heckling us from your red chairs, your luxury chairs.
So what do we got going on today, Kirk, man?
Well, I'm really excited today. So we have a Hollywood legend for any of us here in Nebraska, Todd Nelson, who founded Nebraska Coast Connect, which is basically an organization for almost 30 years now that's helped myself and many others as we kind of get into the entertainment business, particularly folks who've gone out to L.A. They meet monthly, been meeting monthly consistently for over 25 years, I know. Todd's from here in central Nebraska, grew up in Holdridge. So, went to, I think he, just like us, for weekends, you go to Kearney and go to the World Theater and see the movies there. And so, share a lot of common history. But today, Todd's going to kind of talk to us about his journey. He started here in Nebraska, how he got some exposure here, maybe a little bit about terms of endearment, I'm not sure. And kind of his story to Hollywood, and then how we started Nebraska Coast Connect and kind of what that's done and what he's doing now in Los Angeles. So welcome to the show, Todd. Thanks for I'm glad you can make it to Nebraska and make it all the way out here to Kearney.
It's great to be here, guys.
Sweet.
Excellent.
I finally left the bubble.
2 years. So how long has it been since you've been on a plane, just out of curiosity?
2 years.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. So how does it feel to be liberated?
It's been a little traumatic to not see any masks at all back here. We're still doing that thing in California. And so it's a little nerve wracking, but I've adjusted.
Yeah, good.
It's nice.
Good. So what are you doing back in Nebraska this trip, of whatever you can share?
Well, I'm part of the Chancellor's Advisory Council for the University of Nebraska. And for the past few years, we've been doing everything on Zoom, of course, during the pandemic. But it's good to be back in person. There's a group of, I guess it's probably 20, 30 alum of the university who the chancellor leans on for advice. He also gives us a lot of insider information so that we can be ambassadors for the school.
Great.
So it's a great group. And happy to be part of it. It brings me back in the spring and the fall.
Excellent.
So it gives me a good excuse to come back. When your folks leave the state, it changes.
You probably don't have a lot of reason to come back, do you?
Don't come back nearly as often.
And, yeah.
It's a good excuse to be back, and great to see you and everything that you're doing here.
Thanks. Thanks. It's been an exciting time the last few years, and thanks for all the help with my corona and bringing people together to help us make that happen.
Yeah, that's kind of what we do, is just make connections, and whether they're connections for people working back here or in Hollywood, but we want to be a bridge that serves that purpose of just getting everybody together. It's one of the things I love the most.
Awesome.
Networking.
Awesome. Well, let's start with your journey. How does a kid from Holdridge end up in Hollywood? Spend close to 30 years in Hollywood?
Well, I tell you, I kind of was just always doing it. I think I came out of the womb with a camera. I swear, was always in the local theater productions. Made that a big part of my school experience. Always in all the fall plays and Also was always a big movie maker, taking my dad's old 8mm out and shooting. And I think I was about 12 when I roped the whole extended family into a making of a Superman movie.
Okay.
I cast my dad in the blue tights.
Cool.
My mom sewed the cape. And, you know, it was just a family effort. My granddad was the criminal mastermind, and we shot in an alley behind the store. And my dad was a banker in town in Holdridge, and my mom was on the city council. And you know, like, it was a kind of a big deal to get him in tights in the middle of downtown Holdridge. So we had to shoot his scenes coming out of the phone booth at 6 a.m. so nobody would razz him about it. But that was, you know, just kind of gave me my start. I always had a supportive family who was fully engaged, whatever I wanted to do. Sure, we'll make it happen. My cousin and I grew up like brothers, and we were magicians in Holdridge from an early age, and started out performing for birthday parties and various corporate events and things. And it grew to a point where we had our own TV show at NTV.
Wow.
And they invited us to
– So this predates Terms of Endearment then.
Oh, wait. I was still a junior and senior in high school, and we had our own little kids show doing magic and showing how some things were made. And it was great because NTV let us do our own thing. We wrote our own scripts. We set up our own stuff. We'd come in on the weekends and shoot where there'd only be one guy in the whole studio. And whatever we wanted to do, he'd make it happen.
Wow.
So we pulled that off. We were actually awarded Junior Magician of the Year by the Society of American Magicians. It was kind of a big honor and a lot of fun to play in that world. It gave us a real good start and gave me a sense of, hey, TV, I gotta get into this television stuff, because it was a great beginning.
So the NTV studios, it's kind of between Kearney and Holdridge, right?
Yeah, it's right in the middle.
It's like Axtell or something?
Yep.
Yeah. It was a strange hybrid of ownership from Holdridge and Kearney, and they decided to plop it right down in the middle. And so it's out in the middle of nowhere. But what a great thing, being a big fish in a small pond.
Yeah.
And having a lot of freedom to just create whatever we wanted. And it's a lot of fun.
So I guess your choice of what to do in university was pretty much decided then.
Kind of was, yeah. I really couldn't have done anything else. I ended up doing a double major in theater and broadcast journalism so that I could incorporate dramatic elements but also have access to all the TV equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no film school at UNL at that time, and so I just kind of made my own. It was a great time. I worked with a lot of great theater people and had some experience working out at Public Television Nebraska.
Okay.
And, you know, a lot of freedom in a place like that. Nobody had ever quite done it the way I was doing it. Mm. And so all my advisors and professors were like, hey, look, if you want to pull that off, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
They gave me a lot of support to just create whatever I needed.
Fantastic.
I had a thesis project my senior year where I first did it as a stage play, and I decided to make it into a lunch theater. So we took over a space in downtown Lincoln, and people came in, had their sack lunches while they watched the play.
Uh-huh.
And it went really well, and then I decided to turn it into a short film.
Hmm.
And so we shot out at Johnson's Cafe out by the penitentiary. Senator Dave Landis was my main actor.
Mm.
Mary Weiss, another grad student actress. We just had a great time with it. And I was able to see the differences of doing live stage play and then turning it into something on film.
Mm-hmm.
Great experience. Had a really good time with that.
Fantastic.
And it ended up airing on PBS. So, you know, there was a legacy to it as well.
Hmm. Interesting. So I know we've talked about somehow you managed to get involved in Terms of Endearment, which in that era was probably one of the only movies to be filmed in Lincoln. How did that come to be?
Big deal that a major film shoot was going to happen on our campus.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how I found her, but the casting agent was Jackie Beavers, and she took a shine to me and cast me as an extra in Terms of Endearment. And we shot our scene at Kay's Restaurant in Lincoln on the day that Deborah Winger and John Lithgow were shooting their they're seeing, talking about their illicit affair. And if you see that movie, you'll see me right behind them eating potato chips all the way through that scene. So cool to
have to watch it now
with James Brooks, you know, a well-known Hollywood guy. And he was so down to earth, so friendly. Had lunch that day with John Lithgow, giving me all kinds of advice and tips. And well, it's kind of an open secret that I worked at KETV as a cameraman and sometimes on-air reporter. And that night, the guys in the Lincoln studio were razzing me that I'd been on the set of Terms of Endearment. And our guest was Governor Bob Kerry.
Okay.
And Bob was asking all about the film shoot. And I said, Bob, why don't you go down to the set and meet these folks? Deborah Winger's a riot. You'd love her. And so I gave him the number of who to call to get on the set, and he did. A couple days later, turns out they were dating.
And, so I think it's fair to say you had a hand in that. I mean, it seems like maybe that might not have happened had you not.
I don't think so. She ended up moving to Lincoln and buying a house, and they had a nice long relationship because of that. Crazy moment, and he just happened to be in the studio that day and found out about it, and away we went. He still kids me about it.
Where is he these days? Is he in New York still at the new school?
He's mostly been in New York.
Okay. We now have a bridge dedicated to him, you know, connecting Nebraska and Iowa, as you probably know.
Yeah.
So, you know, so how did you end up in Hollywood? What was kind of the next steps for you to go?
You know, I always kind of knew it was either New York or Hollywood. And in my junior year, I took a few weeks to go visit L.A. just to see, is this a place I could really live? Is this a place that I could find some work? Would I be able to make a living here? And, you know, back in the day, there was no internet. There was no easy way to have access. But I did find in Love Library a big book, a directory of Hollywood professionals. And I started going through that. And I selected about the top 100 that I could see what might be some kind of a connection. And by hand, I typed out 100 letters.
Wow.
Shipped them off. I got about 10 responses, which – After all, it's pretty not darn a bad good. Ratio. And those responses were, absolutely. All I was asking for was a cup of coffee, a little advice, and they were all very generous. You know, we said 10 minutes, but it usually turned into an hour and a half. And people love talking about themselves. And once I got them on a roll, I could see a thread through all of their conversations, which was they're just human. And they're making a living just like anybody else. And there was no reason in the world that I couldn't do it too.
Right.
Excellent. So that was my junior year. When I went into my senior year, I really started focusing on, okay, how am I going to make it work? What am I really going to do to get in the door? There came up on the bulletin board at the J School an advertisement for an Academy of Television Arts and Sciences internship. And I thought, there we go.
Okay.
And I applied, ended up getting it.
Wow.
There were 15 internships given out that year. I think now they do maybe 100 or more. But at that time, 15 college kids got to come to Hollywood on the Academy's dime. They put you up. They gave you a little stipend so you could live during the internship. And mine, I was assigned to Days of Our Lives, the soap opera.
Oh, wow.
So, again, a great education because I got to see how an hour of TV could be made every day.
Yeah.
And it was an intense experience. I got to see a lot of production through that summer. And because they're a union crew, there wasn't a whole lot I could do.
Yeah.
I couldn't touch anything. I couldn't move anything. And they didn't really know what to do with an intern. And within 3 days, I'm like, I gotta turn this around. I gotta
you
turn
gotta
this
define
into something.
What you're gonna do.
I'm just gonna be sitting here all summer. So I started going up to each member of the cast and crew and the writing staff, and I would ask them if I could shadow them one day. And they'd pick the day, and whatever time they showed up, 5 in the morning, if they're in the makeup chair, I'm there next to them. Or if they come in and they're setting the scene or they're working on the writing, whatever it was, I'd shadow them, and I'd have a chance to have lunch with them, follow them through the day. So I really got a sense of how each person on the cast and crew made this show happen. And it was a great education. And plus, they got to get a sense of who I was. And I can remember an assistant director saying, you know, what are you going to do after this internship? Mm. Because I know about some PA positions mm-hmm. I could help plug in and mm-hmm. turned in that very thing. I worked on some game shows and some mm. pilots and a Bob Hope special and all kinds of weird little projects. It just kept me afloat.
Yeah.
And one thing led to another, and I got a call for an appointment to meet with a production team that needed a PA, and especially in post. And I had done so much editing at Nebraska Television that mm-hmm. I had a little experience with post. And this series turned out to be The Golden Girls.
Oh, my gosh. And
so I worked the full first season of The Golden Girls as their post PA. Great experience. You know, nobody really knew if the show was going to work or not.
These yeah.
old ladies, is anybody going to tune in?
Yeah.
And, you know, we made three or four of them before it hit the air. Then when it hit the air, it was a huge hit. And, you know, we were off and running. It was a real juggernaut.
So you stayed the full first season?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great time. I mean, a PA position in Hollywood can be just about anything. Some of the poor PAs, you know, were picking up dry cleaning.
Yeah, yeah.
There were a few times where I'd have to go get the producer's kids in Malibu and take them to the ex-wife's house. And not-so-great jobs. But when they're trusting you with their kids,
they trust
you. You know, they count on you. They really see something in you. Another thing that was great about being the post PA is that I was the guy at the end of the night who would take the videotapes they'd shot and have to take them to the post house.
Mm.
So I'd have to drive them across town. You know, I just got an old clunker of a car, putting it in the trunk of my car. And every time I'm driving over, I'm thinking, you know, they've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to shoot this episode. If anything happens to me, you know, my God, it would be horrible.
It'd be devastating.
But again, they trusted me. They valued that I could do that, and it was a great experience to have that kind of responsibility.
And then what did that segue into?
Well, the director of the first few episodes of The Golden Girls was Paul Bogart, an amazing director who'd been around in the early, early days of television, live TV, that kind of thing. He then went on to direct most of the All in the Families. Just a great guy, had amazing connections, and he hired me as his personal assistant. So I went off with him for a few years, and we did pilots. We did a miniseries with Lee Remick. We did a PBS project with Michelle Pfeiffer that he actually cast me in. So I'm in that too. It gave me my SAG eligibility. And it just could not be a better job, because anybody on the cast or crew that wanted to get to the director had to come through me.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up knowing and getting to know everybody on all those productions, really seeing from soup to nuts how a project is made, from the earliest meeting in his agent's office to the very end of post. And nobody else on the crew had that kind
exposure.
Of scope.
Yeah, yeah. Fantastic.
Great time. One of the best jobs I ever had. And it really taught me everything I need to know about the business and how it works, and how also kindness goes such a long way. And this Nebraska work ethic that we have, you know, they could throw anything at me and I would take it on with a smile and get her done. You know, because that's what you do here.
I
didn't know anything else.
That's kind of the mindset.
It gets you far in Hollywood.
So do you feel like that's really been an asset in Hollywood? Do you feel like you've seen other people, you know, benefit from that whole
thing,
you know, Nebraska work ethic thing?
I got to say, I'm at CBS and Paramount now, and there's a position open at Paramount, and the senior VP called me and said, "Look, we're just not getting good candidates. Don't you have some Nebraskans? Because I love that Nebraska work ethic. Bring me some people, please."
Yeah.
So, you know, that kind of thing happens all the time. Nebraskans really are known for this honesty, this sensibility, this common sense, and this attitude of, well, we're just going to make it happen no matter what we need to do.
Yeah.
Is that kind of what gave you the idea to start the Nebraska Coast Connect, or how did that all, what was the?
I had a theater professor in college, Dr. Bill Morgan, one of our absolute favorites. He was a fantastic director, a director of directors, and taught us so much. I would come back and visit him at Christmas time, and we'd usually have a long lunch, and he'd pull out his basket of Christmas cards from all of his students from generations. The guy had been there for 20, 30 years, And so he knew all of his students and what they'd gone on to do. And quite a few of them were in California. Mm. And he said, you're kidding. You don't know Harley Jane Kozak? You don't know Sandy Veneziano? And, well, here's their address. Here's their phone number. And
I see.
Slowly, I started accumulating folks that had come out of the school and were working in California. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know them yet. And over time, I just thought, you know, gosh, if we could get all of us together, wouldn't that be something? Mm-hmm. It would be such a powerful thing to have all that talent in one room. And I thought maybe we'd have 20, 30 people. Mm-hmm. But it turns out that our first event was over 200 people working in Hollywood that had some connection with Nebraska. The UNL Foundation helped put us in touch with David Murdoch, who was a developer. He had built the Cornhusker Hotel in Lincoln and built the same style of building as his headquarters in Westwood. Big fan of Lincoln, and he hosted us at his home in Bel Air for our first event. And that just got the ball rolling. And we decided a few years in after hosting, you know, multiple events a year, we decided to really stabilize it and have a monthly gathering, a way that everybody would know on the date, circle it on their calendar, this is the date we're getting together. We'd pick the second Monday of the month. And ever since then, I think it was 1995, we have not missed a month. Every month since then, second Monday of the month, we host a meeting. I sat down with my friend Kirsten Wilder, who at that point was the editor of Variety, the magazine in Hollywood, and she'd been a 20-year veteran of that magazine. She's now gone on to running the publications for the Alumni Association in Lincoln. But she sat down with me in a thesaurus. We were like, we just can't call it a meeting. What are we going to call it? We started digging around, and we were like, salon. That's it. And just like the salons of old where artists would gather and be able to share, network, and you really be a support to each other's art. We thought, that's it. We're the Hollywood Salon.
Nice. Right here. And you can see right there.
There we are.
Awesome.
And so like who are some of your first speakers? And maybe you can talk a little bit about some of the highlights over the years.
You know, we have
certainly
had
some really interesting
folks.
From every aspect of the business, too. Yeah.
Basically, everybody who's anybody has any connection at all to Nebraska. And we're not picky about that. We don't hold people, hold it against them if they grew up in Ohio or Florida or anywhere else. And frankly, I don't know of any other group like this. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these people that come from other states like to hang out with us because they don't have anything at all like it in their school. We're not a university affiliate. We're not an alumni group. It just is a loose assortment, a collection of folks that have some connection to Nebraska and or just like hanging with Nebraskans. And either way, the thing about it is, you cannot make it on your own in Hollywood. You have to have a support group. And the best part is that this support group can help you with anything you need. So people show up, you know, fresh off the covered wagon, as we like to say. They show
or
up.
Or bus or train, whatever.
With a script under their arm, but they have no idea how to get started in the business. And we'll help them find a couch to sleep on, or we'll help them find a roommate, or we'll help them find a writing partner, or whatever it is. And a lot of folks shooting films will come to us saying, hey, I got a couple of PA spots. Will somebody volunteer to help me out this month? And those kind of things are just the opportunities that you need to get your foot in the door.
Yeah, and I think a lot of great collaborations have come out of it. And there's certainly a lot of great speakers. We got one sitting in the studio here who was last month's speaker.
That's right.
I've done it, I think. John Bokenkamp has been the speaker, I don't know, a couple summers ago, and Alexander Payne. Calamity Kate, that was a really interesting one here recently.
Right. We also like to support the folks that have stayed back in Nebraska and made their mark there. So Lita Powell Drake had been Calamity Kate and then had a long career in both commercial and public television in Nebraska, really, really shaped television of the state. And so we wanted to get her on. We were lucky to be one of her last big public appearances before she passed. Ron Hull is another one who just revolutionized public television, not only in Nebraska.
He was an interesting speaker.
Corporate,
too.
And having lunch with him tomorrow.
Oh, great.
So, you know, these folks, were transplants to Nebraska. They weren't originally Nebraskans, but they fell in love with the place and they stayed because they just fell in love with the people and saw the opportunities for making good television and theater projects here in the state. And so they became huge advocates for that kind of work. So we want to support that too. We just really see ourselves as a bridge, as a way of connecting the folks in Nebraska with the folks in Hollywood and keeping it all flowing and everybody knowing each other, helping each other.
And I think one of the interesting things is that, you know, I know you were doing it, was at the Culver Hotel, right, for a long time?
We've been there for a long time. It turns out Harry Culver, the founder of Culver City, was a Nebraskan.
Wow.
And he was a UNL grad when he came out in the early part of the 20th century, and he decided to be a real estate developer, started creating Culver City from scratch. The Culver Hotel was his headquarters. And so we were looking for a new place to host the salons, and the Culver welcomed us with open arms, and they're a great place to be. We meet in his old office. Harry Culver's old office is now a conference room at the Culver Hotel. And when pre-COVID, when we were meeting in person, that's where we were for many years. Before that, we were at CBS, where I'm a producer, and we were able to take over their commissary, and that was a great space for us. Raleigh Studios was another one. We started at the Hollywood Athletic Club in Hollywood many, many years ago. We're coming up on 30 years in November. We'll be 30.
Wow.
So it's a long, hard time, but
kudos to keeping it going all these years, month after month. I think that's where Randy met you, right? Was at the Hollywood Athletic Club, right?
Absolutely was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll never forget that. And he's like, I said, okay, if I join in too, please do, get in here.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And I think the one, you know, I like to find silver linings to COVID because it makes it, I guess, a little bit more easy to deal with. But I think one of the great things is the connectivity it's created with people here in Nebraska, like myself, who are doing stuff here, and Kate as well, you know, because now we can join the, you know, the monthly meetings without being there. I knew about it for years. I think it's probably John Bokenkamp that told me about it, and was always like looking at my calendar and go to LA. It's like, oh, it's not on the second Monday, you know, hoping I was going to, you know, the stars were going to align and I was going to be in LA at the right time. And then when COVID hit, I was able to join almost every month since. So,
well, we've promised everybody that's been signing on from a long distance away that we'll continue some kind of hybrid approach. So even when we start again meeting in person, we're going to continue to have a link so that those of you from out here can join us. So it's been a great thing. And we'll figure it out. I mean, Zoom isn't the best. I think we're all looking for a program that will be even more interactive. I think everybody hates seeing each other in those little boxes.
Yeah.
But, you know, everybody knows how to use Zoom.
Yeah,
that's been the silver lining.
Yeah, the ubiquitous nature of Zoom has definitely been helpful.
Yeah,
I think one of the interesting things about the monthly meetings is that not only do we have the speaker, but then we have a time to, you know, go around to all the participants and hear about what they're doing and what they're thankful for. And I think that's a really great element that helps connect us all.
We do have special guests, but, you know, I like to think of it that everybody's a special guest and everybody has a story to tell. And, you know, when we hear your story, it's easier to connect with what you're doing, to find out how we might be able to help you or how you can help us.
Right.
That's the whole idea of networking. It's all about who you know, folks.
Yeah.
It's all about who you know.
Yeah.
I have never gotten a job on a resume.
Yeah. It's always about somebody. Who,
it's that somebody knows what I do, trusts me to do the job.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And hires me for that. So I think the more connections you make, the more opportunities you're going to have.
Can you give us some examples of some collaborations that have evolved through the Coast Connect? And
well, one is you've talked about John Bokenkamp. I mean, he showed up and was parking cars and working as a waiter at the spaghetti factory when he had a great script, but he didn't know how to break into Hollywood. And I had lunch with him one day, and I gave him my application for a screenwriting competition, and he didn't even have the $40 to admit his screenplay into the contest. But I lent it to him, and he won the damn contest, got an agent, got a manager, and got his script produced. So those kind of opportunities come about because, you know, you're in the right place at the right time around people that want to help you. Similar kind of story with Marion Dare, who Has recently written for Better Call Saul and yeah. many other good projects. Breaking Bad kind of gave her a start. But she showed up at the salon and was about at the end of her rope, going to have to move back to Nebraska. And somebody gave her a little lead on a project, and she was able to stay a little longer, and she mm-hmm. made it happen. So she came back as a guest in the last year or so, and she just praised the Coast Connection up and down for giving her a start.
That right there makes me feel like that is definitely the main goal and like the theme of Make a Move. Because if you're just sitting on your butt in your house waiting for the door to open and someone to knock, it's not going to happen. You got to get out there and
make it happen
and network. And like you say, it's everything. And it truly is. It's awesome.
It really is. Really is. We've had a lot of stories like that. A few people have met and gotten married, this group.
So you can find
life partners.
Do you can advertise that as one of the perks of going?
Hey, you know, I never make any promises. This is all up to you, folks. Mm-hmm. We like to think of ourselves as a fertile field.
Yeah.
And you come, plant your seeds. We'll help you nurture it. We'll help you make it grow. But it's really up to you.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to make your career happen for you, but I will offer you the opportunity to meet people who just might be able to help you.
Cool.
That's awesome.
And what are you doing these days? Like, obviously, you know, this is like all of us, I think everybody associated with this, we all do multiple things. And obviously, this isn't how you earn your living. So, you know, what do you do?
Well,
nine to five.
An executive at Disney Studios for a good long while and really got my start as a suit. Kind of working up that side of the ladder at the studio. I had an opportunity to make a documentary that became a real personal passion project. It was a film about homeless kids who were making a play about their lives. These kids all wrote their stories and then performed each other's stories, not necessarily their own. So it was a really powerful thing. It was part of the LA Arts Festival. And it made a big splash. I started because I was friends with the woman who was directing this whole project and put it all together. I took a camera in behind the scenes and shot the making of the show, and then the show itself. We shot with multiple cameras, so we could show what this show looked like, give a feel for what it was like to be in the audience of this amazing, powerful performance. And then I followed these kids for the next few years to see what actually happened to them? What was the outcome of them being involved in this kind of a project? And all of them went on to the most amazing things. They were all giving back in big ways. One guy got his script into Sundance Lab, and Robert Redford was helping him make his next movie.
Wow.
Another went on to Columbia and became a director. He's doing really well there. Like, fantastic stories. This was a seminal event in their lives, and it really changed the trajectory.
That's awesome.
They went from truly homeless when I met them and living in a shelter and trying to scrape by to being able to give back and be able to tell stories and other people's stories. And it was a powerful thing to watch. Ian McKellen, Gandalf, was our narrator.
Wow.
He stepped in to do that just out of seeing the rough cut of the doc. The film went on to 55 film festivals all over the world over the next few years. And it really gave me a sense of, I don't want to work for anybody else. I just want to do this. And so I vowed at that point I was just going to do my own thing.
Yeah.
Didn't go back to Disney. Instead, I pursued my own stuff. A buddy of mine was like, well, you need to make a little living somehow. How about you come and help me on the weekends at Fox Television? And I was able to do some promo work for him. And that changed when he moved to CBS. I went with him, and I continued doing more promo work. They had a few international shows that they sold at that point. There were six shows out of the CBS lineup that they sold internationally, and I made all the promo packages that could be sold overseas. So
you had to do them in the language of
– we gave them a toolkit. We didn't try to do the different languages, but we gave them a split track, clean – graphics. So once they got our toolkit, they could make them into any language they want.
Got it.
So it was a little niche thing. I thought, well, this will be great. I can do this for a few days once in a while, and it'll give me some pocket money. But it's grown and grown and grown. And a few years later, I really established it. My company's called Braska Films, of course. and you Now today we have over 350 shows that we make promos for.
Wow.
Deliver all over the world.
Wow.
Got a great team, mostly Nebraskans who work for me.
Nice.
Because why not?
Why not? Yeah.
Work ethic again.
Yeah.
And so that's what we do is we do it for CBS, Paramount, and the Paramount Plus network and help make that a global experience rather than just domestic.
Excellent.
So that's been my big gig for the last few years. And I'm also on the side developing some film projects and working with my old buddy, Alexander Payne.
Fantastic.
And a few other folks in Nebraska who want to make some new things happen. And so
awesome.
That's what we do.
So you can make a lot more trips back here to meet with him, or is he coming out to see you?
Well, a little bit of both. Luckily, he lives on both places. So
yeah.
It's great. He was a tenant of mine. I managed a little apartment building, and he showed up looking for an apartment one day. This is before he'd made any movies at all. He had written Citizen Ruth, but he hadn't made it yet. And we became fast friends. As soon as he filled out the application, he said he was from Omaha. I was like, what? You're from Nebraska? So he made his first three movies about 50 feet away in the next apartment.
And no kidding.
That's how we became friends. We used to throw the best parties in town. Each of us in the six units of the apartment would host a party together. Somebody would have desserts, somebody would have entrees, and I'd usually have the theater, and we'd have little shows and do great stuff. It was such a blast, and especially as he was just getting started in his career, and he was a huge supporter of the Coast Connection and everything we were doing there. And so we've definitely stayed in touch. I've
been to
Cannes with him to premiere both of the movies that he's taken to Cannes. And we just support each other in every way we can.
That's a great thing. That's one of the great things, I think, between, you know, this kind of connection of folks from Nebraska. I think there is a pretty genuine effort to support each other. So
it's true.
I certainly appreciate everything you've done to support my efforts. And yeah, and always happy to be involved in
more to come.
Yeah, and on the Hollywood Salon. So, all right. Anything else you want to share about your journey that might be inspiring to you know folks looking to make that move into?
What's the future look like for the Coast Connect and everything? Like, you got any goals that you've yet to achieve?
Well, I think you know. First of all, it's just fantastic that this thing continues to thrive. I don't think I ever began it 30 years ago thinking that we'd still be going and still be needed this many years in. But people keep showing up. You know, there's new generations of folks that come through. Hollywood's a big, scary place. Mm. But boy, when you get 40 Nebraskans in a room and they're all talking shop and they're all able to help each other and, well, I'll come see your show. Are you able to work on my movie this weekend? And that kind of atmosphere makes it a lot like a small town where all of us come from. And, you know, Nebraskans, I can't explain it. There really is something in the water.
Right behind Riley. I don't know if it's in shot like it. Or not. Oh, yeah.
That's really awesome. Is. It's something, it's very uniting. So you can meet somebody from another town in Nebraska, but as soon as you find out where they're from, there's an instant camaraderie.
Connection, yeah.
And you put that together and you can really parlay it into some good stuff.
You talk about the work ethic, but I think the other like little part to it is if something goes wrong and a Nebraska is like, oh man, my tire blew or whatever it might be. We're not like, what do we do? Like, it's just, I think that's kind of unique to it. Maybe not just to us, but like, we have that, okay, I'm gonna figure this out.
Yeah.
Like,
we
take it to the next step, I feel.
Which is what I always refer to as rural genuity.
There you go. There
you go. I like to bring that term in anytime I can.
You know, one of the things I would tell people who are thinking about a job in Hollywood, thinking about a dream that they'd like to make a movie or be involved in some way is don't let anything stop you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's persistence that's going to win the day and making that network strong. I come from Holdridge, town of about 5,000. And, you know, it's crazy how many folks from Holdridge have made some success of themselves in Hollywood. It's a crazy thing, but it's like once you see somebody else doing it, you realize I could do that.
Yeah.
There was a kid a few years younger than me growing up. I always knew him as the little kid in our church and in the school. He would always do the doodles for the school newspaper and stuff. Ryan Quincy, and his family bought my family's house when my folks moved out of Holdridge. And so he actually had the same bedroom that I had growing up. And, you know, he looked at me in Hollywood and said, well, I want to do that. And Todd did it.
Yeah.
He had the same bedroom. So why not?
Of course, it's possible.
He came out and he became a big deal, a big head animator at South Park. Just because he happened to live across the street from the creators of South Park, another weird connection.
Yeah. Yep.
But he pulled it into a major career. He's now a huge animator for Netflix, has had his own show produced, a fantastic show, which, by the way, he said in Holdridge, in our house. So watching his animated series all about our small town, you know, he had our house and the neighbor down the way that we both knew, and the high school and the convenience store. I mean, all of it was like my life, but just skewed slightly.
And animated.
And animated. So awesome. We're dear friends. And you know, again, I support him on everything he does. But it was just that little spark of like, well, he did it, so I can do it.
Yeah.
And that's what we try to inspire throughout the show.
I think that's very, very powerful.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And another side note, the theme song for this podcast, Make a Move, is written by a guy from Holdridge.
It's amazing.
Yep. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for coming in. Really appreciate you making time during your busy schedule here in Nebraska. It's great to have you on the show.
It's been great. Thanks so much. I love seeing what you're doing here in supporting filmmakers. And, you know, My Corona and all the success that you're having on that and the documentary and all, you know, you're also an inspiration to a lot of people.
Thank you.
It's fantastic to watch.
Certainly try my best to help the next generation.
Hey, Riley here. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Make a Move podcast. For more content, check us out on all major social media platforms and makeamovepodcast.com. Until next time, get off your butt.